that we had at the last assembly work session. Some of it is a little redundant, but I do think redundancy when we have this level of capital project and development going on isn't a bad thing. So I'll try to be brief in the areas where we've covered some of the content and then go into a little bit more detail in other areas. And I have the borough manager, Mason, on the line, and my colleague, Amber Aldad, on the line, who runs the capital projects division. So these folks can chime in where they see fit throughout this presentation.
And can you start out by telling us who's on the coalition?
You bet. So the coalition, the Economic Development Administration under this particular pathway requires the project to have a coalition that helps guide a lot of the decision making and influence as it relates to the economics and establish some level of policy and input as it relates to the project outcomes. These projects, though, have been in the queue for close to 25 years in terms of planning and conceptual development, and we're executing them now. I would also say that the majority of these projects have been listed in our capital projects priority list, which is republished every year in January, and we now have state priorities and federal priorities. So these projects aren't new. They have been longstanding priorities of the borough. You just have a team of people right now that is coordinating at a level where we can execute and seek additional funding to expedite these projects. So the coalition is formed up of our borough staff persons, including the public works director, municipal light and power, port director, capital projects, and myself, as well as the borough manager. And then we have community participants from the Port Commission, the Wrangell Action Group, and some private business entities. So we have local representation. And then we have some agency partners such as Wrangell Public Schools, Wrangell Cooperative Association. And then we've branched out beyond local entities and engaged our regional Economic Accelerator Southeast Conference, AvTech Trade School, and even the Department of Labor, and have the commissioner attending the meetings as well. So those guys have been great. One of the latest developments is the director of AvTech, Corey Ortiz, is connecting with Wrangell Public Schools superintendent to talk through different scholarship opportunities that are available for kids and bringing some pilot programs down here to Wrangell that could act as teasers for students who want to get into the trades and maybe do a 12 to 18 month program. So excited. And I even got to meet with a student today, Caitlin Gillen, who's working on a project, but also run her through some of those scholarship opportunities as she wants to follow the same track as Jason Hay and get into the Trident program supported by AvTech. So very excited about that. Great coalition. And we have four meetings with the coalition, and then there will be ongoing meetings with that group as the project gets funding and then moves through the implementation phase as well. So any questions on that?
We'll be talking about it in those meetings at the coalition.
So the coalition meetings follow the same track as what you're seeing here. So there's strong parallels. There's some minor tweaks and changes that kind of reference public versus the coalition audience, but very similar. So coalition meeting number one looked very similar to the public meeting number one. This is the same framework that the coalition listened to last week. And then later this week, the coalition will meet again and talk about pre and post disaster impacts and project costs overall, and then move into some economic benefits of these projects once they're implemented. And next week, we will go through a community conversation in town hall, but I'm not going to go into great detail there because I have a slide and we'll run you through all the plans
yes.
in that regard.
Thank you.
You bet. So I mentioned this last week, but I just want to highlight it again because it is shifting the Wrangell's trajectory in terms of economic momentum, and we're seeing some early signs and symptoms of optimism and good progress towards shifting kind of the downward trajectory that we were on, stabilizing and now moving in an upward pathway. So we gained 1% in our population this past year. It's the first year in over 10 years that Wrangell has gained members to the community. So very excited to report on that. We also saw one of our earliest indicators of shifting economics was increased positivity in the local business climate survey, which lended itself to a greater level of optimism as it relates to business sentiment. And then last year, there were 13 new homes constructed in Wrangell, which is good for construction economy, helping offset the housing burden, and, you know, is good overall indicator that people want to move here or they want to stay here and they're reinvesting in property around the community. And then we did sell 17 out of 20 Aldertop lots that have been added to the tax rolls. And we are seeing some activity on site there where some of the properties are already being cleared and folks are reaching out to Public Works to talk through driveway permitting, utility connections, so on and so forth to spur their development. So we anticipate anywhere from 3 to 7 new builds coming online this summer. And that's just what we know from having kind of off the record conversations with folks that invested in those properties. So very, very excited. And then we had a complete and successful sale earlier last year of all of the industrial lots that went up for public auction at the industrial subdivision nearby the Forest Service office. So that's great. And then obviously new residential land under development through the Mental Health Trust. And that is developing along Ishiyama, or what most folks call Spur Road. So a bit past the shooting range on the upland side, and then a prospect of developing 27 acres of land on the water side in partnership with the Mental Health Trust Land Office. And some of you guys may have seen a survey circulating through the community. We are building out a relocation guide and have been pulsing residents on what are the top 5 reasons to live in Wrangell. As you can imagine, community and connectivity with other residents is one of our greatest assets. It's the people that make this place so great, and then the nature and landscape that surrounds us. But the two top things that people identified in that survey that they think will help us retain residents and bring new opportunity are housing, affordability, and access, and economic diversification and job creation. So hopefully through this portfolio of projects and partnerships that are evolving, folks can see that the borough is making every effort to diversify our economy, build on those things that we know well, that we do well and want to expand on, and bring in opportunities that maybe are unique or new to this region or new to Wrangell, Alaska specifically. All calculated in risk and outcome, but I believe it's a diverse portfolio, and I hope that you see that through this presentation and our partner panel that is going to come forward at the community town hall.
And search?
Yeah, search planned unit development. So search is investing nearly $5 million some odd dollars into a multi-parcel subdivision, and they're building 8 new units for their traveling and local workforce, which is fantastic.
And then childcare.
Oh, childcare, yes. Childcare opportunities made possible through Clinkett and Haida in partnership with the Wrangell Public School District. So trying to alleviate some of those pressures and challenges that have really plagued our community for the last decade or so. So, of course, we are working through continued engagement in the tourism industry. So we want to experience some growth without losing what matters to the community. So, again, trying to establish a balanced waterfront and diverse partner agreements, and then work through some modest and intentional capacity for growth. So we'll talk a little bit later about some common themes that we have heard or concerns that we have heard voiced either through the boards and commissions or one-to-one conversations or email inquiries that have been shared directly with staff and borough administration. I think it's important to recognize the workload that the borough team is under right now, and our ability to get funding for multi-million dollar capital projects, to execute those projects in compliance with the granting agency and regulatory bodies. Hopefully you guys have noticed through Parks and Rec taking on building maintenance, that routine maintenance is improving, corrective maintenance and infrastructure work is improving. We're working to strategize our road replacement schedule over the next few years and really build out some policies and plans that help maintain that effort even when staff transition or turn over in any one position. So, you know, we can make all the great changes, but have we really done our job if those changes can't be sustained if you remove one person from the system? So building out those structure, operating procedures, and long-range plans. We, as borough staff, even had a strategic planning meeting a couple weeks ago where we talked about our large portfolio of projects, what our long-range plan is, and some strategies that we can build out to help maintain that momentum. And thanks to Mason for bringing us all together and helping to coordinate and reinforce how important that long-range strategy is for you as residents, the people that we serve. Right now, we have 21 projects and $56 million in funding in the queue, and that is for a two-person capital projects division. They oversee project scope and development with the engineering team. They also drive a lot of the funding acquisition and planning. And they also work closely with the borough manager to help strategize and prioritize those projects and seek support from state leadership and federal delegations. So hats off to Amber and Mike Howe for the work that they do and all the asset managers within each department that help bring those projects to light.
And Kate, Mason, if I might.
Yeah, there you go.
Perfect cue. And I would just say to Amber's credit, Mike's as well, a lot of capital projects in addition to this EDA lift that we're working on. We have Aldertop. We'll have the rest of those sales happen. We are looking to sell a few more lots in the phase two subdivision. We did some work there. We'll have the public safety building have new roof and siding this summer. And then the school will have roof and siding and some mechanical components as well. The waterfront will be filled out this summer. McKinnon Street or Odison Hill will get done, and the reservoir bypass. And then a fun project will be the trap and skate range improvements. So over $30 million of infrastructure will be invested in the communities, in the community of Wrangell this year. And we're really excited to get some of those projects done.
Awesome, thanks Mason. So of course I've talked and stressed enough about leveraging momentum. We're trying to be intentional, pairing our partnership to stretch the federal dollars. And the EDA specifically really wants to see that. So the EDA is basically looking for communities to stretch their dollar, multiply it, have a return on their investment. And that requires the borough to seek investment commitments from various partners. So of course, the tenants at each site have been asked to make a financial commitment that can be demonstrated in the grant narrative. And so they're kind of the direct beneficiaries. And then we have those tertiary beneficiaries that benefit from the borough's investment but may not be site tenants. So an example would be our tour operators that will benefit from waterfront expansion and dock modifications. They're not necessarily tenants of borough property, but they are beneficiaries of the borough's investment in that infrastructure. So those private sector commitments are critical to the EDA grant. And it was the same process when we went after the funding for the water treatment plant.
Recently, there was a forum for fishermen, and
I'm going to go through that.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yep. So relationships are critical to the overall impact. Why are we doing this? This is for the residents of Wrangell and the community overall. As I mentioned earlier, economic diversification and job creation was the number one thing people want to see the borough improve to keep residents here and to grow our population and economic opportunity. Partnering with local businesses, on the ground partners, and then that private partner collaboration is a core strategy of ours. So these projects build on that momentum. As I mentioned, the 25-year longstanding plans, which some of you in this room have helped foster and build through various master planning efforts, feedback sessions, and by your participation here tonight. This all positions us for great long-term economic opportunity. And we may not always agree how we get there or the scope of this project or the terms of that agreement or this agreement, but I think we all are united by the fact that we want things to be better for ourselves, for our kids, for the future. And that is, you know, directly what motivates all of us here at the borough currently. So we had a stakeholder meeting since our last community engagement. We've had one-to-one stakeholder meetings. We've had roundtable discussions, public work sessions and presentations, both with the coalition and our community. I went to the middle school today and had a presentation with the eighth graders on these various projects and got some good feedback from them as well, and they had a series of questions and concerns, and some of them parallel what we hear from our adult population, and some of them were unique to the things that they care about, which was really cool. And this picture is our Fisherman's Roundtable that Mason hosted last week at the Nolan Center. We had nearly 30 people participate in that. We were able to share a lot of our project information here that you all have listened to, and then really get into the meat and potatoes of the challenges that our fishing community is facing. And I think it's important to recognize that the fishing economy, processing, and maritime industry has been the backbone that has supported Wrangell through the last two decades that really offset the burden and the demise that the community may have otherwise felt from the collapse of the logging industry. So hats off to our fishermen. It's not an easy environment out there right now. Lots of regulatory burdens, lots of people making decisions that don't understand diddly about fisheries in Alaska. And we're hoping to build on that momentum and at least get people on the same page and develop a strategy for supporting that industry beyond infrastructure investment, which has really been the primary focus over the last 10, 20 years. Mason, did you want to elaborate on the fishing piece of it?
In the interest of time, I'll kind of save my remarks for the borough manager's report, but I did have some really great takeaways. I appreciated the 30 or so people that came out for the discussion. The cold storage was an obvious asset that people want to preserve in that industry. We talked a little bit about the costs that are incurred for most of their business expenses, whether that be the high fuel costs and the lower fishing prices. But I have a number of notes to share with the assembly tonight, and I'll save those for the manager's report. But really appreciate Steve Miller and Commissioner Yeager's engagement throughout those discussions as well.
Thanks, Mason. John's in the room here. Steve has left us for warmer pastures in Hawaii, but appreciate him as well. So what are the key feedback themes that we've heard at the board and commission levels through some direct survey and responses and our one-to-one conversation? There's definitely broad support for port redevelopment and infrastructure. I think every person I've spoken to thinks that the JEG Marine opportunity is a landmark deal for Wrangell and really wants to see that come to fruition for our town and for that site. And that would be synonymous with what we identified in the feasibility study for that property back in 2016. Freight, value-added wood processing, manufacturing or scrap metal and recycling, and then marine fabrication were among the top four things that folks wanted to see at the site, but also were suitable for the site. And so it's really cool to see that momentum grow and that be a possible reality for us. And Mason's been working diligently to foster that relationship. And I'm sure you'll hear a little bit more about that from him, as he said in the borough manager's meeting. And then we talk about the concerns that people have. There's cautious concern around energy resilience. Do we have the capacity to meet the demands of the energy related to power and also water? And can we process waste in an efficient, effective way from these users if we extend utilities out to the mill property and have all of those tenants on site? And then, of course, we live in a remote area. Things are very expensive to get in and out of the community, and we already experience high costs of living. So protecting existing ratepayers through terms and policies and lease agreements that allow for interruptible rates, or if we exceed capacity and have to go on backup generation, how that's managed. That was definitely a common theme. And then environmental remediation and mitigation. So what's the noise pollution? What's the water pollution? And what are the immediate effects and risks? And how are those things going to be regulated? And those are things that would be included in terms and policies of lease agreements, but also requirements of each entity based on whatever the governing body is that oversees that. So, you know, for water and sewer, it's DEC. For air and quality and other components of environmental risk is the EPA. So we would blend some of those requirements into our lease applications or lease terms. And then blending industry with destination. How do we kind of build out this balanced waterfront where we expand the Marine Service Center and also accommodate a visitor population while retaining public access to the waterfront and green space that people can enjoy? Everybody, including myself, loves to get a Wolf Shack or J&W's burger and then go drive out to City Dock or park along Outer Drive and eat their lunch. And we want to be able to continue to do that. So how do we ensure that there is circulation and preservation of existing access through these plans? So we'll talk more about that at a later time in the presentation. And then freight reliability, redundancy is important, suitable location. And then, of course, there's concern related to if the freight location is moved from downtown out to the mill property, what does that mean for our overall cost of goods and transportation? And how does that trickle down to your average household? And then the other common theme, as we all know, Wrangell is about the kids, and the kids feel that. And you can see that through some of the reports that have been published by the superintendent, but workforce development centered on youth, trades, and STEM education were common themes that came up in past discussion. So I think I've hit this. We're covering through designing shared benefit, diversification of our partners, trying to better understand the core needs of each sector and possible tenant at the site, so we can make sure that we meet those demands and any new infrastructure that's built can accommodate that without affecting negatively the current ratepayer, applying best practices across environmental components, and then blending the benefits across all the different industries in our community, and then the environment and workforce component too. So that basically just summarizes the pieces I wanted to cover. our project overview, we'll get into the location, some overall scope, and then the costs associated with that. And we have recently named this project Wrangell's Economic Revival, Anchoring the Future, Empowering the Region. So it definitely has a ring to it, if you will. I like the revival component.
Amen, sister.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the waterfront piece right now. So at any point, Amber or Mason, if you want to touch on things or interject here, happy to play off each other and share more detail. But for now, I'll just go through project scope and what it addresses and the overall budget of the project. So the waterfront is expansion and modernization of the downtown working waterfront. It includes fill and dock reconfiguration and some marine infrastructure support, improved circulation and access. This isn't necessarily directly tied to the grant. The grant is more the fill area and the dock modifications, but we have to consider any construction along the waterfront and how it's going to be integrated into the broader waterfront plan, which we will continue seeking funding for. And it's designed to support the fishing community, marine services, and tourism, while also providing for community engagement activities like concerts, outdoor events, additional retail and commerce space. So it addresses our aging dock infrastructure, our limited capacity at City Dock, and the conflicts between users and constrained operation in a small land area. So by relocating freight, it opens up a bit of the waterfront and thereby allows us to expand the Marine Service Center and still accommodate destination and tourism economies as well. So we'll go through some photos here, but the rough order of magnitude or the projected budget right now is in the $12 to $13 million range. And I may have misled us here. Amber and Mason, can you speak to whether any utilities will be provided in the Marine Service Center fill area, or if that is a component of the dock modifications? Not all.
I can speak to that.
Go ahead, Amber.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so in the Marine Service Center, there will be water and electric power extensions through that field. And then at the City Dock, we'll also have water and power extensions to that new floating dock as well. So those will be included. And just a clarification, so the total of the two projects that you see within this downtown waterfront, we are looking at about $17 million for the combined. So in our cost estimate, our initial cost estimate, we've got $13.5 million for the City Dock expansion. The majority, probably two-thirds of the costs there are related to the dolphin work, both removal and installing the new dolphins. And then as we move down to the Marine Service Center on the south side, we're looking at nearly $4 million for the fill project and all the utilities that are required there, as well as the environmental control controls that would be required for storm drain and whatnot.
Awesome. Thank you, Amber. Appreciate that. So just for folks that weren't privy to the conversation at the last public work session, I think it's important to note that the existing dock can only accommodate a certain profile of ship. Some of the ships that call on Wrangell have to anchor offshore because our infrastructure doesn't accommodate them. And we have different rate sets for those that tie up versus those that anchor offshore. So when we accommodate a broader vessel profile, we're able to gain the full revenue that is possible from ships tying up. We also see a higher population of passengers disembark from ships if they can actually tie up to the dock versus those that have to get on the smaller vessels and come ashore by other means and methods than the big ship. So, you know, that's important for some of those, you know, 100 or 1,000 passenger to 1,500 passenger ships. The more that come off and kind of cruise through town, the greater the economic benefit is. And I don't have those numbers in terms of dollars and cents, but we have a great spreadsheet that can help calculate that. So we'll have some of those projections and how that will impact our port revenues at the town hall meeting next week. So we'll talk through project impacts. But of course, the Marine Service Center expansion there on the right is going to allow for more upland storage space, but also leased space. It's my understanding from the port director, and Commissioner Yeager can trump me if I'm wrong here, but that we are at capacity in our Marine Service Center. We don't have any available area for new leases and or storage unless vessels or other lessees move out of that space. So it's going to allow us to expand that, and we'll kind of blend the Marine Service area with vegetation along the backside of the Nolan Center. And the next image will show you how this project is going to incorporate into the broader waterfront master plan that you guys have seen before. Amber and Mason, is there anything you want to add to this dialogue as I move to the next screen here?
Yeah, just briefly, Kate. So obviously this next photo is going to show that the waterfront's going to be filled out completely from the abutment of the old barge ramp to the old mill dock. So just want to make that apparent for folks. That previous photo kind of shows just a portion of that waterfront filled. We do aim to get all of that done this year. And on the dock modification, which is also on the screen here, the floating dock component is also just a matter of competing with other port of calls, such as Kluwak. They're getting more competitive in the region. We want to offer a tie-up that's allows for all demographics to be able to mobilize off the ship and disembark. There's gangway alignment issues with our dock as it is. So if some of the people in the room remember the Ruby Princess that came to town, we did a gangway shift after the tides had changed, and we had a massive influx of people come off at one time. So this would be a smoother trickle of people coming on and off the ship. So it's kind of a nicer project for that as well. So I just wanted to point those things out.
Awesome. Appreciate that. Obviously, the barge yard build out is still subject to be refined in the future. It's not a part of this particular grant application, but we did want to demonstrate kind of the long-term vision of what was the last waterfront plan and merging that with a few new developments. So one thing is we're keeping the Campbell Drive right away, which initially was going to be vacated in the long term. I think that's an important corridor for downtown activity and also accessing this infrastructure, because the dock that ACL is working on, American Cruise Lines, is planned to be a drive-down dock that fishermen and local residents can use. And so we need that thoroughfare there. And for anyone who's ever complained about visitors walking in the middle of the street or not being able to adequately get to the post office at noon on a weekday, we aim to help alleviate that issue by rerouting passengers along the waterfront and keeping them off the main downtown area. We do plan to put in wayfinding signs along the waterfront to redirect people back to where the business sector is in the downtown corridor. But if we dump them into the cul-de-sac there, they just keep on walking down the middle of the street, and it would be better for overall pedestrian safety and community traffic to have them along the waterfront and then move into downtown through other side roads.
And back to that other, we have an item before us tonight on the agenda. The Port Commission recently sanctioned those 6 vending sites. Are those illustrated in the blue squares?
Yes, rough area. And John and
but that'll be the location
for that. Yeah, okay. That's the general area. They've identified six or so different vendor spaces. We saw some increased interest last year, and want to kind of get ahead of that and create a framework that will help set the stage for the future. So more to come on that. And I know there's been some community dialogue about cost and availability and proximity and the requirements for utilizing that space and what some other alternatives may be. So coming up with some unique opportunities for small business through other means and methods, if it's not the downtown area, hopefully in partnership with the Chamber of Commerce. So dovetailing into the Deepwater Port, so redevelopment of the former mill site into a modern industrial subdivision, removal of the failing bulkhead or the infrastructure that's along the face of the waterfront there, and replacement with an armored shoreline, construction of roadway and improved access through the highway, and installation of utilities to improve the site and allow for new tenancy, and then relocating partner and freight and other entities to that area. I think it's important as it relates to this project that no matter who exists within the site, whoever our partners may be, this infrastructure and construction scope is required for anyone. So most tenants are going to need water and sewer and power at the site. And there is power already at the site, but water and sewer terminates just north of the property. And the grid is dated and is not adequate for current users. So we need to improve that infrastructure. But at one point, that site was fully powered when the mill was operating out there. So we wanna make sure that we have shovel-ready industrial partners to attract new tenancy, that we build out reliable freight and marine service operations, and we reduce the development risk for private investors. And that risk really is tied to, if they make a private investment, they need to make sure that the public entity is going to provide the utilities and infrastructure necessary. So that's, when I talk about risk, that's where that term comes from. And then the project budget for this, as I understand it, Amber, is near $47.5 million. And that's inclusive of construction, design, permitting, contingencies, and other inspections that may be required. And final cost is really dependent on any scope modifications, phasing, and permitting outcomes that are deployed through construction. So I'm going to turn over to the next page here and see if, Amber, you have anything you want to add to that overview.
Thanks, Kate. I guess I would just mention, as you look at this diagram here of the site, the various tenants and the way that the road and utilities have been laid out, it's important to note that this conceptual design that we have before us really is built around the potential occupants that we have before us right now, that being AML with the barge ramp, JAG with the shipyard, and the data center through GreenSpark. Those three in particular are what are driving the entities driving this layout. So based on that, we did just get our current cost estimate, which I will say came at a little bit of a sticker shock for me. I've been reviewing it today, trying to figure out if we needed to reduce scope, where we could do that. And there are some ways we could do that. We would be giving up some design criteria that we gave to the engineers to include and making modifications for that. So I think overall, we'll need to sit down as a team and understand what we can afford. We do have a 20% match for the total cost of our three projects. And we are looking at currently about $68 million for the three projects, including the flume replacement. So I guess just really on this one, it's a significant project. Just the work that it takes to do this level of work for an industrial subdivision is great, and the costs are great. I think some of the areas that we could save some costs would be if we decided not to remove all of the bulkhead rail cars and replace that with the armor rock that we currently have scheduled in this project, and then possibly reconsidering the concrete roadways and substitute those for or with gravel road and ditching. Wouldn't completely offset the cost for the concrete, but it would be reduced cost. Other than that, I think it speaks for itself. It's a pretty simple layout. It's just very costly.
Awesome. Can you explain to the public this circumstances on the southern edge of the property?
Sure. So some folks may be aware that the state passed or conveyed land off to municipalities over the course of the last, I don't know, 40 some odd years. And so we acquired land from the state basically from City Dock all the way out to the mill property. And that land is encumbered, and by that I mean restricted, in that we can make good use of the land, but we cannot sell the land. So that southern triangle that is in purple is restricted by state patent. It can be leased, it can be developed, it can be used for industry and purpose, but it cannot be sold. So previously, the tidelands, and it is considered a tideland, all the tidelands in the surrounding area were held by lease with Silver Bay Logging. And over the last handful of years, a portion of the property has been leased by Tideline and Channel Construction, and they are still using a portion of it. The blue is the portion of land that the borough is exchanging with Tideline Construction. They cleared the site and helped ready it for marketability and attracting new tenants. And we did a land for labor exchange to reduce our overall costs. So the blue is subject to be Tidelines by the end of March this year and will not be owned by the borough. The remaining parcels that are identified in gray, green, and yellow there would become most likely leases with each of the tenants. And there's different benefits to leases versus land sales. Some of it's related to long-term use and site control. Some of it's related to private sector benefiting from public-private partnership and funding that's available. A lot of waterfront-dependent communities avoid selling their tidelands so that they can maintain a certain level of control and just opt for long-term 50, 90-year leases in some cases. So really each of those arrangements will kind of be driven by the interest of the private sector and negotiations at the borough manager level. And you can see that little, oops, excuse me. There's this little odd thing branching off the funnel there off the southern tideland parcel in purple. So we're going to create an easement that runs along the Zemovia Highway property line of the blue to get to the southern tideland parcel so that we can make good use of it. But I think our long-term goal would be able to provide direct access from the highway, which would require some higher level planning and coordination with the State Department of Transportation, who we do have a great working relationship with, and they are aware of the evolving development plans here at the mill site, and we'll obviously be consulting with them throughout the planning and design process, and then through implementation as well.
I have a question. Are each of these parcels independently able to be developed,
No, we need to
or are they all? interconnected, and so the whole thing has to be done, or can one or the other move forward while the others are?
So that's a good question, and I will kind of redirect some of the questions to the end of the meeting. But I think what's important to recognize in what we've presented here is the borough is really doing the bare, I wouldn't say bare minimum in terms of effort and quality, but what we are subject to fund here through this construction project is the base need of the site. And development through any private sector party within this site isn't dependent on one or the other. So Tideline Construction could continue their operations. They already are present out there. JAG isn't dependent on AML. AML isn't dependent on JAG, Greenspark, et cetera. Obviously, the most important out of all of this and our lifeline is freight. Like, that is the most critical thing that we need to focus on within the community. And then, of course, kind of ticker taping through each private party partnership based on their overall economic opportunity. So, again, JAG is a landmark deal for our community if it can be realized, and we are taking serious measures to help foster that relationship through what the assembly will review tonight, which is the funding for a feasibility study for this site, which would do some market feasibility, some site feasibility, and 30% design. And that's in partnership with JAG through a third-party consultant. And that will help us seek funding from the federal government for an appropriation, either through the Department of Defense or other grant funding opportunities. So, you know, in short, no, one doesn't preclude the other. One's not contingent on another. I think what's important to note is any person, any entity that goes out there is going to need some level of infrastructure. And that's our obligation as the
power.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
We've got 8 minutes left.
I'm going to breeze on through and thank heavens for timing. The Flume is a pretty straightforward project. It's our water resiliency. I had a great meeting with Duane and Laura Ballou today with our public works director and our electrical superintendent to talk about some of water resiliency, grid resiliency planning. We have a lot of infrastructure projects in the queue. Obviously, we just commissioned our state-of-the-art water treatment plant, and we also have a reservoir bypass project, dam stabilization project, and then we're seeking funding for the Flume replacement, which is arguably one of the most critical pieces of our infrastructure, and lucky for us in this case is the least expensive out of all the projects. But the Flume is replacing aging infrastructure. It helps with some stabilization, some long-term reliability, increases our overall catchment capacity, and protects Ringgold's sole water source and supply. And it reduces in part our emergency response risk and cost, and improves our system resilience and general public safety. And of course, everyone's asking, well, Ringgold, you know, we've got 2,000 people, our infrastructure is aging. Can we really meet the moment with these new opportunities and maintain the service to the existing residents and grow our economy and population? And we believe that we can. And through great level of study and review and partnership and discussion with people who are far more experienced and knowledgeable in any of these areas than we are, we're growing our confidence, and that's reflected in our partners' interest in investing in Ringgold. These folks wouldn't want to come in with $100+ million if they didn't think that we could do it. So $2 million for the Flume engineering, environmental review, and construction. And our public works director is a past concrete mason and knows a lot about that industry. So in partnership with Amber, and reviewing with the engineering team, we actually reduced the overall cost of that project by 30%+. So really kind of taking, a strike through of the project costs and getting down to the brass tacks of what's absolutely needed. So $2 million here. This gives you the route overview of where the flume runs, and then the water reservoir in the upper area here, and then there's a lake down below as well. But this is the existing flume. So we're going to improve that. These photos aren't that great of illustrations. You're like, what the heck am I looking at here? But that's the concrete profile. So it's going to be concrete infrastructure there. During periods of low precipitation, you know, we anticipate it will capture an additional 15% of runoff from the hillside. But during periods of high precipitation and flow in that stream, you could see upwards of 30% capture of runoff and flow from that particular corridor. So very excited to see that. And Mason or Amber, do you have anything you want to touch on with the flume?
Nope, I think you nailed it, Kate.
I have nothing. Thank you.
Could one of you explain to the public that about the reservoir bypass, that we have the money for that and money to strengthen the reservoir? And then the third part of our water delivery system is the distribution within the town that we haven't quite captured yet, but yeah, we will.
Probably a little bit longer answer out of me, and I'll make sure I take that up in the borough manager's report, just given we're running into time here. But I've made a note, and I'll make sure I bring those measures up.
Okay, thank you.
Awesome. Okay, so looking ahead, what does next week look like? We have a community conversation or town hall scheduled on February 19th at the Nolan Center at 5:30 p.m. It's going to be a bit of a marathon. We have invited all our private sector partners to attend in person. So we'll provide an introduction, some general project overview, and then those common themes and concerns I identified earlier in this presentation. You'll get to hear from staff and the borough manager on our strategies and plans to address those, either in lease agreements or other mitigation measures. Then we're going to turn it over to the panelists. So we have representation from Cruise Line Agencies of Alaska, Southeast Power Authority, so SEPA, and JAG Marine Group, American Cruise Lines, Alaska Marine Lines, Green Spark, representation, hopefully, depending on the legislature's process and timing. But from Representative Bynum and someone from the governor's office, and then borough staff. So we have a third party facilitator coming in to help facilitate that panel discussion. And then regional economist Milani Shivens will touch on the economic impacts of the project, post-disaster resilience strategies, and why these projects kind of tie into our ability to weather the storm of major incidents here in Wrangell and across the region. And then we'll have breakout groups, probably small groups of 8 to 10 people at a table with some prompts to discuss the content and scope of these projects, talk through some concerns, some things that you want to hear more about, and any other things that you think the borough should be aware of. And then we'll wrap that up and incorporate some of these findings and community input features into our grant application. And that will be submitted on March 3rd. But really, we're kind of just at the beginning. This is sort of a long trajectory of conversation, partner agreements, project management. So we're really, towards the end of the planning phase, and now more headed into scoping, design, funding, and implementation. But very excited about the community engagement session. And I think the panelists' commitment and attendance really demonstrates their strong interest in investing in Wrangell and showing up for the community and having that face-to-face engagement, which is, you know, important to us as staff. You know, you guys get to hear it from us a lot, and we're happy to be in these positions and share the information with you. But it really speaks wonders when you hear it directly from those that are coming to the community and either are already here and want to expand their footprint or want to come here because they see something that can benefit them, but also will benefit the community by their presence. So very excited about that. Mason, anything you want to add there? I'm going to get cut off here by the mayor in like 2 minutes.
I know the feeling. Anyway, well, I just wanted to say thank you guys for attending. I understand it's a fairly packed room tonight, but I would encourage attendance to that town hall. I think it has the opportunity to be the biggest town hall we've ever hosted in Wrangell. Certainly, as Kate attested to, having every executive of the companies that we're working with present means a lot. It's very humbling to work through the coalition meetings and have 40 people attend of significant status and talking about big investments in Wrangell. And these are activities that this team is sought after, and we haven't had any of these land in our lap. They've been pretty calculated, and the neatest part about it is many of the operations and the investments made will be complementary to each other, and that's what makes me so hopeful about getting this EDA win. So definitely come on out. That'd be a great opportunity to get your guys's feelings on each of these component projects, and I know that there wasn't a lot of time, if any, for questions, but if you guys have questions and you want to sign up for persons to be heard tonight, I'll do my best to answer them in the borough manager's report. You might have to say your name up front so I can get to a response to you. And Kate, maybe I'd ask that you stick around for the borough manager's report just so we can answer some of those.
Absolutely. Happy to do it. And again, you can email me at kthomas@wrangell.com or clerk@wrangell.com if you want to submit some questions in advance of next week's community conversation. That way we can kind of frame up and be able to address your questions in a little bit more detail. And I'll leave you with our new mission after the strategic planning session, which is preserving our past and building our future. And, you know, we know what we know. We know what we don't know. And, you know, we're doing our best for you guys and just really appreciate everyone's patience and engagement and participation at the board level and our one-on-one meetings. And hope that you'll join us next week as well to continue this process. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you for coming.
Kate, one last thing while we have just a couple more minutes. The work session for February 24th, it's actually a SEPA presentation. We'll start at 6 p.m. I'd invite everybody to that presentation as well. That's the SEPA CEO going to come to Wrangell and prior to the assembly meeting deliver a presentation on all the projects we have with SEPA going on and that we intend to work with SEPA on. So invite you to that discussion as well.
And the SEPA has as its goal resiliency in the energy sector. So they're aligned with Wrangell. Very much so.
Resiliency, reliability, and affordability.
Exactly. Assembly, if you need to take a quick break, got 30 seconds.
I think it's 90. Well, thank you, Bob.
My true love gave to me three French hens.